Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by Mr. Marius Brut, that's son of the East Brand. Marius, how are you?
Hello, Nick. My camera's still broken. That might be a good thing for people watching on YouTube.
Yes, I don't think people tune in for our sparkling good looks.
Speak for yourself,
of course. I guess we'll leave that up to the commenters. Of course, the wise and venerable Mr. Terence Corrigan. Terence, how are you?
Well, I don't know if I didn't have my wisdom and venerability where I'd be with a face like this.
All right, let us stop self-deprecating and march on into the news. So, of course, the top story today, and I think we've talked about this a little bit on the show, or we talked about the issue, is that the ANC staff have said that they are going to strike. So this comes after non-payment to the staff. Apparently, ANC staff will not pay their salaries on time. The employees are meeting with ANC leadership next week to picket. ANC Treasurer General Paul Mashatile told the National Executive Committee of the ANC last month that the party was considering retrenching 50% of its staff. Currently, the staff at Lituli House, the ANC's headquarters, are planning to picket outside the building on the 15th of June. And a lot of this is related to the fact that the ANC had to pay a lot of debt to SARS, because apparently the ANC leadership was taking PAYE from their staff salaries, but not actually paying it to SARS. So SARS approached the ANC with this massive tax bill and said, guys, you need to pay up. And once it became public knowledge, the ANC said they would have to pay it. But having to pay this bill has caused them to be short of money to pay any of their staff. So it's a pretty big mess all around. There's also accusations that the pension fund of the ANC staff members has been tampered with. So there's a large number of complaints that these ANC staff members have. And Marius, let me start with you. What should we make of this? Is this a big deal? Or is this not really a big deal?
I think it's a big deal and it's not a big deal. Obviously, it's a big deal for the 50% of ANC staff who might lose their jobs, and it's not great for them. But also tells you a lot about the ANC. The ANC can barely manage its own affairs. Now wants to manage the entire country's affairs. And it also shows you, I mean, the hypocrisy within the ANC. If there was a private company that said they're going to retrench 50% of the workers and they hadn't paid their PAYE and had been messing around with the pension fund, you know, I'm sure if it was a well-known company or big enough company, we'd see picketing out the streets, and you'd be talking about the awful capitalists and how horrible they are and all this kind of thing. But, you know, I think there's also, and we're also going to talk about it a bit later, I think, is where reality meets ideology. And obviously the reality of the ANC having no money has bashed into its, I don't even call it, you know, socialist ideology, because the ANC, I don't think they really have an ideology anymore, actually. I think the main reason for the ANC's existence is to remain in power now, I think. But it also, I mean, as I said, just shows you the hypocrisy of the ANC. I mean, another example was Thandi Modise with that horrible issue with the pigs and the livestock on a farm who died. And apparently the reason those animals died is because the person she'd employed to look after animals, he was getting paid something like 20 rand a day. And the poor man just decided he couldn't survive on that anymore. He, you know, just absconded. I mean, it's not great that the poor animals died, but I mean, the guy probably didn't have enough to flip and feed himself. So, and we all know 20 rand or whatever it was, I can't remember the exact amount, but I think it was somewhere around there. He was definitely getting paid far less than the minimum wage. And the poor man, he didn't actually, I mean, he didn't really have an option at the end of the day. And as I said, I think this just is a microcosm of how the ANC runs the country, how it runs its own affairs. And just the fact, I mean, they didn't pay over PAYE, which I think is a criminal offense. You know, it was messing around with people's pension funds. And, yeah, we've known that the ANC sometimes thinks it's a law unto itself. I remember there's an anecdote or an incident from a couple of years ago. The ANC had imported a whole bunch of T-shirts, I think it was, from China, ANC T-shirts. And this is apparently part of the reason why there's meddling started in within SARS, because they had to pay a significant amount of import duty. I think it might have been the millions. So somebody high up in the ANC phone source says, please, can't you guys make this import duty go away? And the commissioner, I think it might have been Ivan Pillay or somebody, said, no, sorry, we can't do that. You guys have to, you know, fulfill your tax obligations. And that's apparently one of the reasons things started going wrong at SARS. So, yeah, I mean, as I say, it's a micro and a macro issue. And I think, you know, I feel the worst is probably people who might lose their jobs at work for the ANC. And probably a lot of them are quite dedicated to the cause and stuff. So I feel quite sorry for these people who probably, you know, really believe in the ANC. Now the ANC is going to, you know, leave them without an income.
So, Terence, my question to you is this. Firstly, I mean, do you have any comment on what Marius has said? But also, it's a very strange position for a party that's been in power for sort of 20-ish years to be short of funds. Generally speaking, when a political party's in power, even if it's not corrupt and siphoning funds directly, it's often able to solicit donations pretty easily because people want to be close to power. It's usually got a lot of supporters who can give it some financial support. Terence, how do you think the ANC ended up in such a poor financial state?
Well, it's a lovely choice of words that I use from time to time. Oh, Lord, it's worse than I thought. And I think that's basically what we're dealing with here. The ANC, I think, has always been an administrative mess. Now, I remember speaking casually to someone before 1994 who was working in the ANC then, and you know they were claiming 500,000, 600,000 members, and I said, "Is this true?" And he said, "Well, we have a room full of boxes." this was sort of the behind the scenes. Brian Pottinger wrote in the Mbeki Legacy the whole thing about cadre deployment, that the ANC didn't have the skills to run itself, and all of a sudden it wanted to micromanage everything in the state, and we see the baleful influence of that now. Is it a big deal? I think it's a dreadful deal for the people caught in the crossfire. These are real human beings who have obligations. I think that pretty much everything we're seeing here is precisely what the most ideological faction, wing of the ANC will throw at white monopoly capitalism. Late payments, full tax evasion, pilfering from pension funds, and retrenchment. Now, I remember, this is going back about 20 years, a meeting of the Parliamentary Labour Committee. And someone, I think, from the mining industry was saying, look, if you go ahead with XYZ, we will not be able to afford the workforce we have. And one of the ANC MPs very aggressively said, are you threatening us with retrenchments? Well, yeah, there's sort of real world consequences. Situations probably probably very very different. But, there is something, I think, quite symbolic, if nothing else, in seeing the ANC, which, has been wagging its oversized moral finger at the rest of the country for 2.5 decades, now being shown up for the way that it treats its own staff.
Terence, I just have a question. You mentioned Brian Pottinger. If he's related to Bell Pottinger, can we believe anything he says?
Well, he was the guy who coined the phrase "the imperial presidency" of P.W. Buerta. So, I think he kind of locked down his reputation forever. No relation to Bell Pottinger.
any final comments on this, Marius, before we go on?
Nothing really. It'll be interesting to see what happens, and I wonder what the ANC is going to do, if they're going to be putting their if we'll find some hands in cookie jars to pay these people, or worst case scenario, maybe they'll buy at gunpoint force Lesetja Kganyako to put on the printing presses so they can get some cash to pay their poor staff.
Well, I must say that I am heartened by the fact that the ANC is being forced to pay tax.
Yes.
In truly dysfunctional democracies, when everything has fallen apart, the ruling party would never, ever, ever, ever have to pay tax. So them being in financial woes for this problem, for this reason, is, I think, actually a sign that shows that some parts of South Africa are still holding the line and working well. Unfortunately, it seems to be the part that's very good at taking money out of our hands. But, you've got to take the good with the bad. Right. So, let us move on to an interesting opinion article that I think was written either today or yesterday. I think it was yesterday, from Julieta Talebi, who is a journalist. She wrote that she got a call the morning of the article from Gwede Mantashe, which was fairly unexpected. And he was very annoyed with her that she had blamed the current round of power cuts in South Africa at on him. He went on to say that he was one of the main points she criticized in his approach was that he hadn't allowed a raising of the cap for what individual companies could generate for themselves. So currently in South African law, let's say a mine or a business is not allowed to generate more than, I think it is, 10 megawatts for their own consumption to power themselves. A lot of businesses, particularly mines, have been calling for that cap to be raised to 50 megawatts so that they can generate their own electricity, avoid taking from the grid, and also avoid the problems caused by load shedding, which causes a lot of issues for them. Matasha was very annoyed by this. He said, hindsight is perfect science, according to...
Nick, I think we should just point out that today, Sir Ramaphosa did say that they're going
to
mend that.
Well, we'll get on to that in a second. Yeah. We'll get on to that in a second, right? Matasha apparently told her that hindsight is perfect science and that we can't just have a free-for-all. And he also went on to say that there had been a Dear SA petition, which had been signed by 10,000 people showing overwhelming support for keeping the cap at 10 megawatts and that the market wasn't ready for 50 megawatts. So, Terence, what should we make of the minister's thoughts here about his reasonings for not lifting the cap?
You know, I unfortunately, whenever Gwede Mantashe speaks, I can't help thinking of the word hazenile. You know, that we have mountains of this non-existent mineral. Look, I would like someone to explain to me, and perhaps there's a viewer who can, why there would be resistance to raising that cap given the shortage of power being generated by Eskom. You know, this comes across to me, and I must confess to being something of a layman here, as being a sort of a desperate and cynical attempt to retain generation with the state monopoly, or perhaps, and I think someone suggested this either Business Day or the Financial Mail, that this has a lot to do with licensing, that, you know, if you keep those amounts relatively small, you get to hand out more licenses and there exist a lot more opportunities to cut selected people in. Now, if this is the case, then I mean this would rank alongside COVID procurement in its sheer venality. I could well be wrong there, but I think that when a government starts to phone up journalists and berate them, you know two things. First of all, they're doing something wrong. Secondly, let me repeat my phrase: good Lord, it's worse than I thought.
So there was an interesting development. We originally decided that we were going to talk about this story earlier this morning, and then there were a series of tweets announced that came from Cyril Ramaphosa's one of the Twitter accounts connected to the presidency, and it was with regards to reforms to economic policy. And one of the things that was mentioned was raising of this generation cap from 10 megawatts to 100 megawatts, I believe was the number, which is quite interesting because clearly, at least a day ago, Gwede Mantashe was very much opposed to half that amount. So I think something interesting is going on. Marius, what do you think might be happening here?
I think, as I mentioned, when we're talking about the first story, I think this is a issue of reality meeting ideology, and reality is one. And I also mentioned, I think, the show a couple of days ago, sometimes reality does win out over ideology. It happened in the late 80s and early 90s in South Africa when apartheid met reality, and reality and apartheid's internal contradictions meant it was collapsing. Reality won there. Happened in India in the early 90s as well when they moved away from very state-led economic development to much more free markets. And that was also because they were simply running out of money. And I think this is one of those issues that's happening in South Africa. And I think also part of it is the government's probably seeing the anger that people are seeing or feeling. I mean, you just look on social media and Twitter, you know, everybody, even people who, you know, until a couple of weeks ago were telling us how amazing Cyril Ramaphosa is, are starting to complain. And, you know, there's, I think there's real anger out there because, you know, it's one thing, people can put up with a lot of things, but if you don't have any electricity in the middle of winter, and it's been a very cold winter so far, at least up here in Gauteng, I think people are starting to get really pissed off. And I mean, I'm talking about, it's been really cold for me who lives in a formal house and so on. It's much worse for people who live in informal housing and so on. But I think just a point to make, this is very good news for South Africa. I just want to read a tweet from a guy called Ray Mkhlaka. He's a Daily Maverick journalist. He says, "I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer. I'm struggling to celebrate Ramaphosa's 100 megawatt announcement. It took us 13 years of blackouts to get to this point. Since then, so much avoidable economic and human development potential has been lost. The loss is too big to audit or quantify." And I think that's quite a profound point. You know, there's been so much damage done to the economy. So much has been lost. You know, the economy could have been so much bigger if we'd done the right things. And just a small thing like, you know, just allowing people to have bigger, you know, bigger grids or whatever. But instead, we've been carrying on down the same path that doesn't work. I mean, I think it was Albert Einstein who said the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result each time. And that's exactly what happens in South Africa, whether it's energy policy, whether it's BEE policy, whether it's labor policy, whether it's education policy, whatever the case is. There was actually a very good article by Tony Leon from a day or two ago, where I think, I can't remember exactly the phrase used, something like policy necrophiliacs. And it's people who keep on banging about the same, who keep, focusing on failed policies, stuff from the 1960s that we know hasn't worked, and still the phrase is actually coined by somebody who'd been the finance minister or something like that, somebody quite high up in the Venezuelan government, and he'd seen what was going to happen in Venezuela when they decided to follow failed policies. And we all know the tragedy of Venezuela, gone from being the richest country in South America to being poorer than Haiti, probably one of the biggest movements of human beings in the past 50 or 60 years, with so many people leaving Venezuela. And, you know, South Africa, I mean, this is a green shoot, but we also, I think, a lot of signs of pointing us to perhaps going down the Venezuela path. But this is one of those small green shoots, and maybe finally the new dawn is here. I mean, I don't think it is, but maybe there is actually light at the end of the tunnel, and maybe that light isn't an 18-wheeler. Maybe it is actually a dawn.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty much right. I do think that there have been very few achievements in the Ramaphosa presidency, but if indeed this policy does go ahead, it will be a pretty good sign. There's also, I think, a report coming out now that one of our colleagues talked about yesterday that I haven't looked into properly, that Eskom's debt has been reduced slightly. It's still massive, but it's not growing, which is a very good thing. And so that would perhaps suggest that André de Ruyter is doing a better job than perhaps it had first seemed. Although that's still, I think the jury is still very much out on that. But so this is definitely a good thing. But I do fear that there will be a lack of implementation. So I'll give you an example. I know that when it comes to exploration licenses in mining, to find new minerals to open a new mine, investors complained that you needed to have BEE compliance in order to even just explore for minerals. The Minister of Mineral Resources said a couple of times in public that this would be changed and that you would be able to apply for an exploration license without having to be BEE compliant. And yet, repeatedly, that doesn't seem to have happened. The department has stuck by its guns, despite the public pronouncements of the minister. So one does fear that may be the case here, that there might just simply be non-implementation of Cyril's announced change in policy. Terence, do you think that's a legitimate fear, or do you think I'm
Debbie Downer? No, I think that even for those who were Cyril Filiacs at one stage, there has been a large bucket of winter ice cold water poured over them. Much in his career bears out the idea that he was going to be a reformer. I don't think he's only shown one. I think that Morris is correct. This is a case of reality coming home to bite. The problem is that I think that ideology will stage a fight back, and you know, to tweet something is one thing; to actually then put it into practice becomes something else. And I fear that by the time you know we get there, years will have elapsed, and it'll probably come with so many onerous conditions. You mentioned empowerment legislation or whatever. That you know, it will swamp out much of the good that it may have done. That is my fear.
I saw somebody on Twitter said, "Wait for Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma's press conference tomorrow when she says the threshold's actually been raised to 1.1 megawatts, not to 100 megawatts." So maybe.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. But still, good news. Let's hope that there is follow through on it.
Yeah, I think it's also important to give credit when credit is due. And I think this is one of those cases, even though Ray Mahlaka points out exactly, you know, we mustn't put ourselves in the back too much. But I think this, I mean, we bash the government a lot, and I think rightly so, but I think we do have to give credit when it is due.
Well, it's a good movement.
I will slightly disagree with you, Morris, to say that, you know, when the first mine or first business is able to open its 100 megawatt power producing plant, I think we can congratulate the government. But until that day, I remain cautiously optimistic at best.
And mind you, I mean, a government's supposed to make things easier, isn't it? I mean, this is like congratulating a dog for barking.
Right, right. No, but you know, even so, it's good when your dog barks.
This government making things easier. Maurice, when did you leave South Africa?
That's why my camera's not on. I'm actually on a beach in Cambodia.
Okay.
So let us move on to our final story for today, which is quite an interesting one. It seems that the tale of the Israel-Palestine issue, which we talked about a couple times on the show in recent weeks, has been quite a long one in this particular instance. A Gauteng teacher called Sudesh Mulu, who's I think from Centurion, claims that he has been fired from the school that he teached at as a Afrikaans and history teacher because he put in his WhatsApp status, "I am not anti-Palestine, but I am anti-Hamas. I stand with Israel." He says that he got a number of messages criticizing him and threatening him and his family. Someone accused him of being a pedophile and a supporter of apartheid. And then allegedly he received a WhatsApp message from a local community resident, which announced that he had been fired. He tried to call the principal, but was unable to get in contact with him. And then when journalists began investigating this story, the Department of Education in Gauteng said that they were told by the school that he's on sick leave and hasn't been fired. It's a little bit unclear what's going on. Maybe the school put him on sick leave, claimed that they had fired him and is going to quietly bring him back at some point. It's all a bit confusing. Terence, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, look, this is concerning. Both because I think it shows how polarizing and how, I don't know, irrational and emotive responses to this particular geopolitical situation are. There's nothing that this guy said that was that I think was incendiary or intemperate or, you know, outside the bounds of civilized conversation. There's all sorts of little things you can get to put on your Facebook thing. "I stand with so and so. I stand with so and so." You can get the Israeli or the Palestinian version. I'm sure there's a Hamas-specific version. So, you know, he expresses a view, from everything I can tell, as a private citizen, and that's something he has every right to do. Now, then he is, by his own testimony, fired by a state school. Now, what lends me to believe that his account is correct is because a relative of his is quoted in one of these pieces saying that he and his wife are struggling to make ends meet, which suggests there's no paycheck coming. If it was sick leave, there would still be money. And, you know, if he was dismissed via a WhatsApp, I mean, the whole situation, I think, well, first of all, it offends constitutional guarantees of his right to behave as a citizen of a constitutional democracy. But secondly, this is appalling ideological behavior on the part of a state institution. And here's the interesting thing. There's been some cackling about this from within the BDS crowd. That yes, if you stand with Israel, it's like standing with Nazi Germany. You must expect consequences and that sort of thing. But South African education has been consciously politicized for decades. SADTU came out guns blazing, opposing Israel. They participated in Israeli anti-apartheid week. About a couple of years ago, Bladen Zamandi was addressing a SADTU conference and said, teachers must use their influence to spread socialism. So the idea that you are going to take action against this one hitherto unknown teacher with 25 years experience, for making a personal statement of his political beliefs, which, I think he's an evangelical Christian. I think this comes from the belief that Israel has a particular role in God's plan or whatever, which I may not agree with. But, once again, this is also kind of a religious thing. It's obscene. And I we say we must congratulate the government. And this is one time I will congratulate the Gauteng Department of Education if they actually are serious that this is not on. And they will take action, because I don't think there's any excuse on the facts before us that justifies us whatsoever. And I think it sends a very, very sinister message.
And look at that. They said that there's no good news on the Daily Friend. And here we are congratulating the government two stories in a row. 66% good news. There we go.
So if we can just get another 16%, Clyde Motsoeneng would approve.
Yes, there we go. Marius, your thoughts on this issue?
I don't have too much to add. I think maybe I have to look a bit deeper. Often you hear these stories where somebody claims they were fired or dismissed because, they said they like whatever. They said they support the DA, but then comes out that they were actually, harassing people sexually or something. So, but if this is all, if we take this at face value, then it's definitely, the school's definitely made a mistake. And kudos to the Gauteng Department of Education for, standing up for this guy. And just an anecdote, my late mother was a teacher, and she would tell me how sometimes the headmaster and some of the teachers would arrive at school in ANC regalia. A couple of times, the teachers didn't arrive to for their lessons because they'd gone to a SADTU meeting, during ordinary school hours. So, it's a bit, as Terence says, it's a bit rich for the government to complain about politics being in schools. I mean, I personally don't think there is a place for politics in schools. I think that should be left for outside. And, I think teachers must try to be as even-handed as possible. So, let's hope this guy gets reinstated. If everything is, if his version is the correct one, then let's hope he gets his job back and gets paid back pay if he wasn't getting paid, which it sounds like is the case.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. No politics in schools, but unfortunately, as I say, we've passed the sort of point of no return on that. So even if this guy was speaking as a teacher, but my understanding is that he was not. However, yes, to get our education system out of the dysfunctionality, we do need to encourage professionalism, not politicization. So Morris is entirely correct there.
Yeah, I do think that this also, as you said before the show, Terence, this is an example of kind of cancel culture and the way that social media has made us all kind of in the public eye at all times. So some people don't even know what a WhatsApp status is. I've never put up one myself, but it's not a terribly intrusive thing. It's not exactly like he was putting on an Israeli t-shirt, a pro-Israel t-shirt, running around the school handing out pamphlets. And yet it seems to have provoked some sort of outrage. So very concerning. That is going to be a much bigger problem, of course, to tackle, but we do our best to deal with that as it comes. That is all the time we have for today. So thank you very much for listening. We hope that you enjoyed the show. Please check out our episode yesterday with Dr. Anthea Jeffrey and Dr. Franz Cornier, talking about the latest on expropriation without compensation and our efforts to fight back against it, which are very important for maintaining prosperity and freedom in South Africa. Anyway, we will see you next week. Have a wonderful weekend. And keep the flag of liberty flying. Cheers, everyone.